Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. My name is Michael Gray and I'm excited to be joined today by two special guests. I'd like to welcome Jen, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Jen.
Thank you, Michael. Nice to be here again.
Great to have you on the air. And we also have Alex, who's also a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome,
Alex. Good evening, Michael. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you.
Good. I'm a little nervous. I was running through some technical hiccups there at the beginning.
Oh.
And I'm grateful to be doing an awareness practice that encourages me to be here now.
Yes.
We had the same experience on our end. There was just dead silence, and we thought, well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Yes. You know, that is a great strategy. You know, I know for me, with conditioning, can just run with all kinds of stories.
Yes.
Yes, and as you may have suspected, I was trying to get the music going, and it wasn't going.
Yeah.
Well,
you did in the end, so there we go.
There we go. Great. Jen, do you want to start us off? I understand that you have been in Africa recently. I get a lot of evidence on my computer that you were actually there.
That's very true.
I see the photos.
Yeah, we don't just stage those scenes. We actually do go.
Yes. Great. Can you give us a little update?
Sure. I was thinking about it before the call and thinking, my goodness, where does one begin? As usual, it was a really successful, fun, busy trip. But I thought I could begin with some of the things that have happened since the trip, just to kind of fill people in on that. So people heard last week, I think, if they were listening to the radio show, that Josephine, who is one of the women, one of the Living Compassion women in Cantalomba, she's kind of a key player in making all the projects work there. She was very, very pregnant when Dave and I were there, and she had the baby just a few days after we left. And I talked to Teresa on the phone yesterday, who was very excited. They don't name their babies right away in Zambia. They wait for, I can't remember, there's a certain period of time. But I talked to Teresa yesterday, and she was so excited to tell me that Josephine had named the baby Baby Sherry.
Wow.
So
wow.
That was very fun. I just, you know, I think for Josephine, what I project is it's expression of her gratitude for everything that has been brought into her life by this project.
Yes. That's really exciting.
Yeah.
It's really exciting. And, as you know, you give away pretty much all the details in the blogs.
I know. Yeah.
Which, in my experience, were really wonderful again this time. And in my experience, it's really, you know, I'm staying there in Castle Lodge, and I'm getting up in the morning and heading down to the government offices, and then the phones don't work, and so we're going to go out to Cantalomba.
Yeah.
There are technical hiccups as well.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Well, it's fun to hear, that people feel like they're following along because, you know, it's fun for us to do it, and that's why we do it. That's why we blog. And one of the things you probably read in the blog was that we, the women in Cantalomba, needed loans for new roofs for their houses.
Yeah.
And so people can read about that on the blog. But at any rate, we've gotten quite a number of people who have secured loans for the women. So we're really excited to send the news back to them that that's well underway. And my goal is that we'll have 19 loans in place when we go there in the end of June so that we can help them put up those new roofs.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
And that would be the rainy season beginning sometime after your trip?
Yes, exactly. This is the time to do it because the rains don't begin until October. So they have a nice window here where this is the time to do it.
Oh, great.
Yep.
Great. That's fabulous.
Yeah.
And Jen, all of this work is funded in part by a big annual event that we host.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
Yep.
Tell me more.
The Bridge Walk on October 4th.
Yes.
It's an annual event the first year, it was actually someone in the Sangha had the idea, hey, let's go do an event at the Golden Gate Bridge. And it sounded like fun, so we thought, well, why not? And it was wildly successful and so much fun that we kept doing it every year. And this year our goal is to raise $200,000.
Wow.
It's a very ambitious goal.
Wow.
We feel confident we can do it.
Yes.
With the help of everyone listening.
Yes.
Yep. And So it's what's fun about it this year is that we realize that it's real. It's not just the people who can physically show up the day of the Bridge Walk who make it happen. It's people all over the country, all over the world, who are participating in whatever way they're participating.
Yeah.
And so we have a team, a Bridge Walk team, who's putting a lot of effort into wanting to offer to far-flung people, people who are not physically in this location with us, ways that they can participate. So be watching the website. Watch emails coming in your inbox for ways that you'll be able to participate from afar.
Yes, yes. And most places around the country have some kind of bridge.
Some kind of bridge,
whether,
exactly.
You know, literal or metaphorical.
That's right.
Yes, which yes. To me is so fun to reach out to everybody, no matter where we happen to be physically located.
Yes, yeah. It was fun. We had one group last year in Hawaii who was very, they had their own walk, and they had us call them at the time when we were beginning our walk as they were beginning their walk. So,
wow.
the possibilities, especially with technology these days, it's endless what, what
yes.
we can do from far
yes.
away.
Yes, that's really exciting. So there'll be information both in our inbox, I'm guessing, email
yep.
inbox, and
yep.
on the website as well.
That's right.
Fabulous.
Yep.
Thank you, Jen.
Thank you.
Alex.
Yes, sir.
I understand you were on vacation. Oh, maybe not on vacation. You were in North Carolina, but the way it's described to me, it sounds really wonderful.
It was a luxury vacation in beautiful Tuxedo, North Carolina.
Yes.
It was outside of Hendersonville and Asheville.
Uh-huh.
And we were located this time on a camp. There's a camp for boys that was across the way called Camp Mundaman, and we were in Camp Green Cove, which was for girls, but no one was there except for us.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we were doing a retreat there, and for those who weren't listening last week, there were lots of exciting things that we were trying to accomplish there with a huge group of retreatants.
Yes, yes. I think I heard the number 36 retreatants.
That's correct, yeah, 36 retreatants, yeah. We were painting huge buildings. The one main building that we painted had 8 cabins in it. We painted their dining hall. We basically created a trail. We cooked and cleaned the place up incredibly. I mean,
wow.
When we got there, they had been closed for many months.
Oh,
and so
wow.
Just to get prepared, we cleaned it a couple times, actually.
Oh, wow.
We cleaned it for folks to move in, and then we cleaned it afterwards to leave not a trace and leave
wow.
it in better shape than we found it. So
wow.
It was very much fun. Yeah, because
wow.
when we walked in there, they had three weeks left until their big season was to begin, and they were wondering how in the world were they going to get it ready, and then all of a sudden the 36 of us show up and put in our 1,000 hours worth of labor.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was a big
hours.
Win for everyone.
Did you say 1,000 hours?
1,000 hours. That's what I hear. There's someone that's very good with numbers who came up with that number this morning, and so I think that's about half a year's worth of work.
Wow.
One person. So.
Wow. You know, what occurs to me is that 1,000 hours of conscious, compassionate awareness can really move mountains.
Oh, yes. Yeah. A great amount of care and love went into that, what
yeah.
we did. One of the big highlights of my retreat there was when there was some sort of dishwasher issue happening there in the middle of the retreat, and they had their mechanics come by, and then one of the cooks from that kitchen came on by and was involved in that. And when they opened up the dishwashing machine and looked in, the fella exclaimed, "Wow, I've never seen it look this clean." It really moved me when he said
wow.
that.
Wow. Wow. That's exciting.
Yeah.
That's exciting. And in my experience, being at the monastery, that leave not a trace idea is just really powerful and feels really kind.
It is, yeah, because you never know if you'll ever come back again to love that thing or that place or that person again. So
yes.
Right now is when we can actually love, care, and cherish what we have.
Wow, that is so true.
And I want to give a lot of credit to the folks that actually own that place and run that place, because they went out of their way to make everything work for us while we were there.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Yeah. Several times, the fellow who actually coordinates that camp that we were staying in offered me a job.
I'm sure by written note only.
Yes. Only the privileged environment.
Maintain balance. Right. Well, that's very exciting, Alex.
Yeah. And I think everybody had a grand time, too. There was lots of big energy at the end. It was an amazing retreat.
Great. Thank you, Alex. And
you're welcome,
thanks
Michael.
Again, Jen. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Michael.
You're
have
welcome.
Thanks
for the opportunity.
Okay.
Bye.
Welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
Good. I'm just sitting here listening to the good news and grinning.
Yes, I am too. I just realized I'm getting an extra 10 minutes of enjoyment out of every show now.
I know.
Yes.
It's very fun.
Yes.
And that retreat was really extraordinary, and I hope that when it comes around again, people take advantage of being there in that just exquisitely beautiful location. It's hard to find that kind of scenery, especially to have, as Alex was saying, the folks who run the place were so generous with us. I mean, they just said, here, they turned over the kitchen to us, just turned over everything to us.
Wow.
And so it was just, for whatever number of days that was, we just had this exquisitely beautiful place all to ourselves, and it was quite lovely.
That's exciting.
Yes, that's not exciting. Quite as exciting as baby Sherry,
yes.
But almost.
That's pretty exciting.
That's very fun.
Another grandchild.
Another grandchild. I'm telling you, I'm racking them up. And I cannot wait to get over there and see her.
Yes.
So, Josephine has been such an important part of the work there. She's just been, with it right from the beginning. She was one of the first people who came forward and talked to us about what it was like to live there, and her story is very painful and yet filled with courage and hope and all of those kinds of things. And so I just have such a special fondness for her, especially because not because of this, but it just gives kind of a little snapshot of it. Last year when we were there, our summer there, winter, my grandson was on the trip, and he is the same age as Josephine.
Oh, wow.
And so here he is having the life experience that he's having, and there's this young person his age who has already been married, widowed, lost two children, and when we found out that it was her birthday and how young she was, it was just one of those, kind of perspective moments. And
yeah.
Then just the thrill of being able to get to know her and the other folks in Cantalumba and be able to assist in the ways that we can to, help them to have a better life. And that was the thing that she expressed when she first talked to us. She said, I just want to find a way to make a better life for my children.
Wow.
And boy, who of us doesn't want that?
Yes.
So it's very fun.
Very fun. That's wonderful to hear.
Mm-hmm. So as you can imagine, I will come back with a lot of pictures of me and baby.
You mean pictures of Sherry and Sherry?
Jerry and Jerry.
That's great. Sherry, we have a couple callers.
Right.
Lined up here. Okay, our next caller, you're on the line, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Greta from Washington.
Good evening.
Good evening.
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. I wanted to report back.
Good.
It's been an interesting several months since I called, and I'm excited about the more intensive practice opportunity that you've been writing about.
Me too.
In part because I feel like that's how the year got started anyway, with your encouragement and just my decision to do that. And I feel like, you know, some quantum leaps have happened. And interestingly enough, I'm not doing anything, you know, in that way that I want to do things. So, you know, I guess part of it is maybe some of the things we've talked about before about just setting the intention.
Yes, that Gary Zukav, 5% of you makes a decision, 95% of the universe gets behind it. Gary's numbers were, I think I'm close on that.
Yes, yes. And conditioning wants that to be that every morning I have to remember to do things in a certain way to have that intention.
Right.
And if I don't follow some kind of rigorous procedure, then I don't have the intention any longer.
Yes, and you've done it wrong, and you've failed, and you might as well quit.
And that's not turning out to be my experience.
Good for you.
And, you know, it's a lot of it is just being aware and showing up for what is happening and realizing that that's not how it's always gone. So when I see just these little, you know, little things that I happen to fall into or I happen to hear or something just is just a little bit different.
Uh-huh.
But then everything is really different. Mm-hmm. So it's in a way, what I've been looking at is something that you said recently. I think it was maybe about a month ago on this radio show where you were talking to a caller and you said that you had been spending time with your granddaughter, and in the way that we can learn to relate to ourselves, you would never say, how long do I have to love my granddaughter? Like it was a chore for us to do that.
Mm-hmm.
How
long do I have to pay attention to her?
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, so somehow this thing has shifted in me where I'm aware of the potential for loving kindness and compassion in a way that conditioning didn't, you know, conditioning told me that it was going to have to be a certain way
mm-hmm.
for me to be compassionate. And that's not my experience. My experience is there was just this little minor shift in awareness that said, oh, you know, loving kindness or, you know, there's no limit to this. I don't have a little girl that I just have to suffer through loving. I really have this opportunity to have, you know, boundless love for
yes.
this person or whomever.
Yeah, in all circumstances.
Right.
Yeah, all the time. And in this situation, it looks like this. And in that situation, it looks like that. And it's a relationship. You know, we don't always, no matter how much we love someone or something, we don't always meet even our, I don't quite know how to say this, but ideally, we would just be perfect all the time, of course. And it's not even the case that it's conditioning saying, well, you need to be perfect all the time. We want to be perfect all the time. You know, we want to love perfectly. We want to always to be kind, always to be generous, always to be sensitive. You know, that our hearts would love to be that way always. But it doesn't work that way. And so we have the opportunity then to extend that same loving kindness and compassion to ourselves as we learn to love more completely.
And for me, what, you know, what's, you know, I'm kind of sparking to is what unconditional really means.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not sure that I'm fairly certain I didn't have that experience growing up from my family of origin. And I could say for sure, living in my judgmental mind, that it's been, you know, it's probably been relatively infrequent that I've felt that. But now it's shifted enough for me to see, oh, you know, like right now my husband is very sick and he's not shaking it. It's not getting better. And I can see how in the past I would have just been angry or upset that, you know, he's ruining my weekend. Instead, I'm just like so overwhelmed with how hard it must be for him to be so sick. And all I can feel is my heart going, oh my God, I couldn't bear up under that. I just feel really bad. And I want to do, you know, whatever I can and not
anything
very much. Yeah.
Yeah, anything to help him, to support him.
So it seemed like it was this sort of little tick over or some little thing that kicked everything over, and that there's a sense that the view of conditioning, and as you have said many times, our beliefs and assumptions, that there's an actual very vast alternative to that, which, as we've also said, contains all of that.
Yes.
And, you know, this broad field of awareness and compassionate conscious awareness can contain all of what conditioned mind holds for us and everything else.
Yes, yes. Including, you know, getting to the point and having a part of you come up who says, I'm so tired of taking care of somebody. You know, I just want to rest. I just want a break. And to have the same acceptance, you know, the same sympathy for that person as for your husband.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
There's room for all of it.
So I wanted to check something out with you. So one of the things that I determined to do at the beginning of the year when I realized that the slippery slope I was going down wasn't working for me and that I wanted to turn my attention and continue to recommit to practice is I made an appointment to talk to Walter about just this stuck feeling that I have, my energy being stuck and my always being sick.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did find, I made the appointment in January. I only spoke with him in April. And so how I'm working with what he said to me about, well, you know, this energy system is blocked here, like so your third chakra is really blocked and you're holding a lot. It's making you sick because things are not, your emotions aren't coming out. You're just turning things inward.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I'm checking in with you about whether I'm doing this skillfully or not, which is just to do what he advised in terms of trying to use the exercises to open that up.
Yes.
And then just notice how that is for me.
Yes. So, you know, if you if you went to the doctor, and the doctor said, well, you know, you have this low grade infection. And so what we're going to do is prescribe some blah, blah, blahs for you. And what you would do, I hope, is to take that advice, since that's what you decided, that's the path you decided that you wanted to take, and not use that decision to go unconscious or into believing or any abdication of your responsibility for yourself, but instead to say, okay, well, you know, I'm open to that. I'm going to try that, and I'm going to see what happens.
And I think that's what I'm doing. And
yeah.
So, you know, I think at least from where I'm looking right now, I kind of made the commitment. I sort of am preparing the soil, and then some of the shift that he indicated might happen is already happening.
Absolutely. Well, it's one of those, you know, kind of magic places.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you said, you know, you have this awareness and things just sort of tip over into, you know, there's a little click that happens and suddenly you're living in a new reality. And so I always... enjoy. Now, I don't know the answer to this, but I always enjoy seeing that relationship. So did the change happen because I was open to being different? Was kind of like the, it's not a matter of being at center so much as just having an awareness of being identified and then suddenly I'm not identified and I don't actually have to do anything any different because I've, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
So all of those accepting, embracing, letting go, they're sort of all the same experience. It's very difficult to tell, does one lead to the other? Do you have to take that step before that step? Or is it just not even a step, but just the awareness of a step and you're already there?
Right. And one of the things that feels so good for me is I had a lot of information, you know, a lot of what conditioning does, as you've said many times, we just keep it all inside and we don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of my spiritual practice is just mine and I don't talk to anybody about it. And it's one of the things, it's not something I share with my husband in particular. But an opportunity arose recently to talk about the Living Compassion work in passing. And I mentioned that the call had gone out to assist with putting roofs on houses in Africa. And I had the little Cantalomba brochure on the table here. And so I had a conversation with him where I said, you know, and here's the work that the monastery is doing in Africa. And I, you know, I want to sign up to help with this roof project. And he said, oh, that would be really a good thing. I would like to do that too.
Isn't that grand?
Yeah, because it just, we also watched the Fierce Grace video of Ram Dass.
Oh, I haven't seen that. I'd love to see it.
Yeah, totally by happenstance, he was interested in sitting there watching it with me, and then that sparked a whole other conversation.
Yes, and it happens, as they say, organically, doesn't
mm-hmm,
it?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, honey, would you sit down? I have some information to
mm-hmm.
impart.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can all relate to the shields up, red alert.
Right.
Something
right.
coming at me
right.
I don't want. But to have the loving kindness to let somebody find their own way and reach out and have their own experience and include you in that, that's lovely.
Well, and, you know, all of this just keeps sparking so much gratitude for how it happens and how it's possible and, you know, the opportunity to connect about it. And then, you know, tonight when I drove home, I was really tired and I don't know if I want to call in, but I said I was gonna, so I'm gonna. And you know, it just brings up the gratitude again because that in the telling is the reminding of how it happened and how it felt for me at the time.
Yes, yes. And, you know, so much of what we do, well, everything that we do, is experiential, which is why, of course, practice is so important to me rather than, and I mean, I know I'm not the only one, but I don't care about intellectual understanding. You know,
mm-hmm.
I don't care about sutras and I don't care about rituals and I don't, you know, I'm just not interested because all of that, I mean, it may help somebody, but in my experience, what has helped me and what I see helping people have a different life experience is practice, and to have their own experience of what is possible. And when Alex was talking earlier about the retreat in North Carolina, I think that was the biggest piece of what we watched happen is that the part that he didn't say is that those buildings that people were staying in had no windows. It's a summer camp. And it got down to 35 degrees one night, and not much warmer than that for two or three other nights. And, I mean, people were cold. Fortunately, the fellow who runs the camp opened up the blanket supply, and one of the gals at the retreat had thought to bring a whole bunch of extra jackets for people. So it was kind of one of those, you know, loaves and tofu moments, you know, everybody's sharing everything. But what people got to was the joy that's there in participating,
mm-hmm.
in just giving wholeheartedly, putting your whole self into it without any idea of what's in this for me, or I don't like this, or I'm uncomfortable. I mean, we just didn't have any of that. You know, people were just pitching. And now, not that it was a bunch of old-timers either. I mean, there were some people, we had a couple of people for whom it was their first retreat. And I'm thinking, oh, what must that be like? You know, you read about it, and then you get here, and you're cold, and you're working outside, and you're painting this stuff, and you're not sure even what you're doing. And yet they just, you know, they just joined in. And by the time that week was over, I mean, people are just, you know, their eyes are like saucers, and this has been so much fun. And I feel so close to these people that I was working with, and I love this place, and it's a good thing. It's transformative.
Well, I'm excited to see how the magic works when we're doing this collective transformation around the world in this year, you know, this every quarter program, because it, you know, on the intellectual face of it, it seems daunting, but then as we know, anything's possible, and it does seem to be working already.
Yeah, and the thing, of course, that I'm most excited to try out is can we support one another at a distance the way we support one another when we're all in a place together?
Right.
You know, can we together find what it what's required for us to get out of that conversation with conditioning, to get on the telephone when it's time for the conference call, to, you know, to follow along with the emails, to really to support one another in practice. I'm just convinced we can do it. I think this group of people who does this practice, I think I'm convinced can do anything.
Well, we're working on like a 24-hour-a-day immersion thing, so it sounds like there's a lot of willingness out there, and I certainly have willingness and gratitude, so I'm grateful and appreciate everything. And
all right. Well, thanks for letting us know.
Thank you both.
Your husband recovers fully and quickly.
Appreciate that.
And
I'm sure he will, too.
Healing energy.
Okay.
All right.
Good night, Sherry and Michael.
Good night. Thanks for joining us, Greta. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I think gratitude wants to give.
Yes, I think so. It's just the, gosh, it's the secret. I mean, you know, I know there was a thing going around with that name, but it really is the secret to the whole thing. That little bumper sticker that many of us have, the more you give, the more you get. It's just so true.
Sherry, we're going to take a quick break here.
Okay.
And then we're going to come back, and we have a couple more callers lined up.
All right.
Hello, my name is John March, and I'm the leader of a music project called the Zen Blues Quartet. For the last few years, this collaboration of some of the best musicians in the world has been gathering to record and perform as a way of showing our gratitude and love for the music of the blues. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life.
Please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, are you ready for the next caller?
I am.
Okay. Next caller, you are now on the line, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. My name is Amy. I'm calling from Ohio. This is the first time I've ever called in, so I'm a little nervous. But I've just recently started to get into Sherry reading your books and learning about, I guess, practicing meditation and such. And I should let you know, I'm a Presbyterian minister, And I'm coming to this place, I think, where I'm in a, I guess you could call it a crisis of faith, because I think that what I did is that I went into ministry to somehow, I think I went in it to kind of soothe, I'm called to be in a place where I'm doing what I'm doing, but I'm also, I think I also did it out of a sense of needing to be needed, and mm-hmm. I'm struggling now with what I'm learning and trying to understand. From you wrote in your and There's Nothing Wrong with You, that book, that all faith-based, I mean, all religions generally start from a place of internal searching.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, I guess, if you can talk a little bit about that for me, because I guess it's conflicting a little bit with internally what I'm taught in seminary and what I'm required to preach, I guess, is is that, you know, humanity is essentially messed up, and we're not really good until we accept Jesus. But even when we accept Jesus, we're still not that really good. We're just better than we were.
Uh-huh.
And I'm struggling with that because I have spent my entire life feeling like I am bad. I am bad, and I am somehow unworthy and unloved and unwanted. And now I'm preaching, and I'm in a religion where I feel like that's not, it's not being helped. It's not, if I tell people that they are loved, but they still have to do this to really get love, and yet they're really not. I guess I'm coming up against this whole idea of struggling with. I'm just struggling, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm curious. I'm
right.
curious
let
what
me,
you.
Let me jump in here.
Yeah.
So I'm curious. What is your experience of what Jesus said about all this?
Well, that's a good question. I think Jesus is about relationship and about connection with people.
Uh-huh.
But the struggle that I come up with is that if there is no connection with Jesus, if there is no relationship, what then? You know, and I feel like what I'm hearing from you is so refreshing, because what you had said in the beginning of that book is that, you know, the answers are within you. The answers and life and goodness and spirit is in you, and you don't have to search for it somewhere else. But what I'm...
Well, now help me out. Now,
okay.
I was not raised Christian.
Okay.
But isn't that what Jesus said?
Well,
the kingdom of God is within you?
Yeah, but he also kept talking about, you know, come to me. You know, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And
uh-huh.
and
well,
outside
okay.
of me, you have no part in.
Okay.
You know.
Okay. Now, may I?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. So, what if what he was saying was that without what he was, we are nothing.
Mm-hmm.
We could sort of agree.
Sure, sure.
So whether you call it, whatever language we would use for
right.
it, the thing that we know is when we are living with in the presence of God, is that
right.
language?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That we are okay. If we experience ourselves as outside the presence of God, then it's very alarming and upsetting and terrifying and not a good place to be.
Mm-hmm.
Are we
yeah.
in agreement
mm-hmm.
there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that's what he was saying, might it be easy to understand how someone could interpret that literally?
Right.
And that might not actually be what he was saying at all.
Right. Yeah.
And you've probably considered that, huh?
No, I have. And
yeah.
that's where the internal struggle is that, you know, what I'm taught and what the church teaches is so somewhat far from, you know, the actual, a lot of what, you know, actually was said and is taught. And it's just, you know, for
someone.
And
so you're, you're left needing to then become a renegade.
Right. Well, and I'm dealing with my own emotional junk where I'm struggling with trying to feel like, okay, am I loved, am I wanted just as I am?
Well,
and,
now,
and then
again, time out here.
Okay.
Isn't that what he said?
I think, but...
I mean, are you doing or being anything that would have thrown you out as far as he was concerned?
No, but there are people that would argue differently. There are ministers and there are...
You know what? There are always people who would argue differently.
Right.
Have you noticed that?
Right. Well, there are even people in my own clergy circle who would probably disagree with me, and that's...
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and I... Yeah.
But you know what? A lot of people disagreed with Jesus.
That's true.
Yeah. And, you know, he didn't seem to be too focused on that.
Right.
He was pretty clear, it seems to me. Now, I probably enjoy things about Jesus that are different from what Christians enjoy about Jesus.
Right.
The parts that I like are not judging.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Don't you love that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Don't judge.
Right.
I think, you know, if we just kind of stuck with that one. And did he actually say, love one another as I have loved you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could probably pretty easily come up with a fine list of things that we could focus on that we could be pretty sure would put us on the mark for his approval,
mm-hmm,
without needing to slide over into these kind of esoteric places that he didn't spend an awful lot of time talking about.
Right.
Now, I've always thought that he was a pretty savvy chap.
Yeah.
And that probably if he considered something important, he would dwell on that message.
Hmm.
And so we get some repeating messages from him.
Right?
Right. And so I've always thought that, you know, that it might just behoove us to focus on those and see how well we do with those.
Right.
And then move on to the esoteric.
Mm.
The, you know, the thing that he didn't really mention, but it was probably important to him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know those,
yeah,
those kinds of things that I'm talking about?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so the kinds of things that people seem to want to argue about.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if it would be possible for you not to get drawn into that.
Right. Well, and you can probably sense the panic in me because I worry that, you know, if I'm questioning this and I'm starting to see that, you know.
Well, are you questioning your religion, or are you questioning some of the people who practice your religion?
Maybe I'm questioning some of the people that practice my religion, but I'm questioning my identity as a minister, too. Am I,
well,
you know, did I...
Now, even with that, why do you want to be a minister?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm in ministry for a lot of reasons, but primarily recently I've wondered, you know, was I in it for the right reasons?
Now, see, that to me is where you slide over into that same hole that I suspect they're falling into. So do you like people?
Yes.
Do you care about people?
Yes, I do.
Do you want to help them?
Yes.
Okay. That all seems like a good motivation for ministering to people.
All right. Yeah, I don't know.
So if those voices weren't there, let's just talk about the voices, okay? There's the voice in your head, and as you've noticed, that same voice seems to go around other people's heads and seems to want to kind of cause trouble.
Right.
Result in suffering. Create rifts where they wouldn't be if it weren't for that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed that?
Mm-hmm.
That people like to sit around and argue about stuff, and the voices inside your head like to argue about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what if all those voices went away?
Hmm. Yeah.
So, of course, what I'm suggesting, do you believe in the devil?
you know, if we're saying the voices are, then yeah, you know, I might.
Yes, they don't seem to be operating out of loving kindness,
right?
Do they? Yeah, they seem to be arguing for strife and struggle and misery and this person is this and that person is that and who's doing it right,
mm-hmm.
who's doing it wrong, and I just can't see that they're helping anything.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and it's they're not. I'm finding, you know, I read about Jesus with the eyes I was taught to read it with, instead of,
and
I guess.
And you know, that might be a really helpful, fun thing for you,
right,
to do without talking about it too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might not want to go to work and share with folks there,
yeah,
the kinds of things that you're looking into.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe look into some folks who are a little less traditional,
mm-hmm.
In their approach.
Right.
And see,
right,
if you begin to come across people who, you know, who are having the same doubts and questions that you're having.
Right. Well, and reading your materials has been, it's been refreshing and joy filled and just very, you know,
Okay, now here's the big question. Do you think Jesus would like it?
I think so. I think he'd
too.
I think he'd buy into all of it.
I do too.
But I don't think the church would.
I think he would say, "Yeah, that's what I said. That's what I said. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. That's it. That's what I meant."
I think he'd say that's exactly it. And mm-hmm. but and then how do I? Yeah.
Well, you know something. Now this is the real deal here.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't say that I can't say anything about your success at this. You know, in terms of how it's received, but my strongest encouragement to you is to begin to live your experience of Jesus.
Hmm. Just live it.
Just
live into that. Okay.
Just live into that. And when people want to get off on, you know, these into these cul-de-sacs,
right,
that are just going to result in judgment and argument and divisiveness, to just say, you know, I don't know. I think that you know, I just need to pray about that. No, I just don't feel I'm qualified to judge in that way.
Right.
You'll tick people off.
Oh, yeah.
Because you'll make people self-conscious.
Right.
That's okay. You know, just don't, here if I were going to give you advice, which of course I would never do, but if I were, this was the advice that I would give you. Don't quit before you give it your best shot.
Right. Yeah. And I've got to make sure, I tend to do this black and white thinking where I sense a problem and I run from it instead of just...
Those voices,
yeah,
will set you up with problems all the time,
yeah,
to give you something to run from.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to, you know, if you're going to give up on your religion, if you're going to bail out on you know, what you've been trained for and the service that you can offer people and that sort of thing, at least make sure that you have done everything you could possibly do to stay there. Make them throw you out.
Right. Yeah, I feel like I'm in a seeking and a searching place, and I feel like that's okay.
Oh,
I just
absolutely
am continually, the voices of discontent and hatred, self-hatred, are so strong in me.
Well,
and so that's my battle, yeah.
Yeah, don't confuse that with your religion.
Oh, okay, that's a good point. Yeah.
Because those voices of self-hatred are there for Buddhists, for Jews, for Hindus.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So that, in fact, if we were going to say there's a job one, that's probably job one. End the self-hatred. Take a little vacation. Come out. Do a retreat with us.
I need
get
to.
Get to the other side of the self-hatred, and then look at where you are with all these questions.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it, and thanks for dealing with my my questions and my anxiety.
Take care of yourself and stay in touch.
Thank you so
much. Take the support wherever you can find it.
Yes. Well, I appreciate everything you put out, so thank you very much.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Amy. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Ewer. Sherry, have I mentioned what an extraordinary privilege it is to do this radio show?
I think I've heard you say that, and I'd like to say how privileged I feel that we have you doing this radio show.
Oh, it's just wonderful.
It
Thank
is.
You.
It's like a front row seat on all the good stuff, huh?
It's people are so courageous and open.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah, and just it's just so hard to get past those voices to take that in.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And as you're fond of saying, it's a practice and a process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's funny with our last caller, you know, I say this all the time, but, you know, only this, it's such a good person concern she has.
Right.
You know?
Huh?
It's just, it is the kind of issue that only really good people would ever think to have.
Yeah.
You know, am I doing the right thing here? Is this coming from a good place? Is this work that I'm doing really, you know,
Huh? Sherry, we're going to take a quick break, and then I see three callers here.
Right.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Watchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, are you ready for the next caller?
I am.
Okay, next caller, you are on the line, and could you please introduce yourself?
Good evening, this is Beth.
Hey! How you doing?
Can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yes,
good.
I can.
All right.
Okay,
what's going on?
I'm seriously under attack.
You are?
Well, I am born of karma, I am heir to karma, I abide in karma, and I'm supported by karma, and whatever I do creates karma.
And I culturally experience this karma.
Yes. For the last 2 years, I've set up the karma of abandonment.
Uh-huh.
So
How many years? How
well,
many years?
Okay, well, I'm 40.
Okay, good. I wasn't questioning you, I just didn't hear what you said.
Right, but in the last 2 years, it's been, you know, and it's kind of like, and then coming to kind of like a place of clearing and then stepping back into this mess.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay.
I'm clean up that mess.
Uh-huh. Cleaning up messes. Now that's an interesting karma right there, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Yeah. Cleaning has been, I think it's been a good karmic fit.
Uh-huh. So...
Yeah, and, you know, it's like this mess makes me less of a person, and it's a built-in shame mechanism.
Yeah, which is why those voices want desperately for us to believe that we are them.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, there. You know, yeah.
Yeah, because then you're gonna feel bad about it. So it's like a person who is born with some sort of physical condition that they're born with it.
Yeah.
And then they're supposed to feel bad about it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. It just doesn't work that way. And it's, you know, it's harder for us to see when it's all this kind of mental, emotional, psychological stuff, but it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's okay.
So it's okay. Yeah, it's just what's there. It's just the, you know, all those, it's the hand you were dealt. It's the, you know, whatever those expressions are for, this is the part that you get to clean. So here we are in this big old house, and you get to clean that corner of the living room. You know, we didn't give it to you because we don't like you.
I'm not afraid of cleaning other people's stuff, but boy, this stuff just feels so bad.
Yeah.
It's so much easier to deal with other people's stuff.
Yeah, sure, because you're not
attached.
But
in dealing with other people's stuff, I've learned how to deal with my own.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it's like there's a really strong temptation to not step up to the plate.
Mm-hmm.
And just
yeah,
being,
those voices would talk you out of stepping up to the plate, right?
Oh, yeah.
If they could, sure.
Where's the back door?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was interesting listening to the previous caller. That's kind of been part of this karma, is I was a biblical scholar. I went through the crisis of faith.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like in listening to her, there was a lot of compassion that became available for me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, because you can hear your own story, which is the argument for Sangha, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you hear somebody else and you go, oh, wow, that's obviously a really good person struggling with that issue.
Yeah, yeah, and there was a real desire to join in, like that the verse. The work that I've done with the Sangha has enabled me to reenter Christian life.
Mm-hmm.
Been contacting, you know, people that are voting for McCain, and
I thought that was a political life.
That seems to be kind of like the dividing kind of place,
uh-huh.
Which is. Really good-hearted with a lot of, you know, sweet intent kind of place.
Uh-huh.
And I liked what you were saying about the service and finding that, you know, it's kind of like in living my day in service is kind of like real protection against these voices.
Yes. And the tricky part for most of us, and I project for you, is allowing yourself into the circle. Right?
Yeah.
So that's that thing. You know, if it's cleaning up somebody else's stuff, oh, I can do that all day long. I have such understanding and such sympathy for other people and how good they are and how hard they work. And me? No, we can't go there. But we have to, or the rest of it is just phony.
Yeah.
It really is. It's you know, it's no different. It's no different from, you know, I just love human beings. You know, my heart is just open unless they are the wrong color, unless they are gay, unless they are another religion, unless they are.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, we can look at that and say, ooh, you know, that just doesn't feel like that all-embracing, open-hearted, compassionate acceptance that we're going for. So then you get the person who says, oh, yeah, I've got all of that. God, you know, I don't care. I just love everybody, even if they're heathens or pagans or whatever they are. It's just fine. Now, how about you? Oh, well, no,
yeah.
I can't do that.
Yeah.
It's just a big. It's just a big story until we can. Until
it's amazing
we actually,
how real it is.
Until we can actually embrace in compassion, as my teacher used to say, the one person whose suffering we can actually experience.
Yes.
Huh.
Yeah, and kind of feeling like there's like a place of suffering with it and a place of burning with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like feeling this out by the way.
Yeah.
Moment by moment.
Yes, absolutely. That's exactly what we're doing, moment by moment by moment. Here's this thing. Is it possible to embrace it? Yes. Here's this thing. Is it possible to embrace it? No, not yet. Okay, well, then this is where we're gonna stop and work for a while.
Yeah.
Because we can't actually bypass anything. You know, we can't go around anything, fortunately. You know, we need to clean it up as we go.
It's the same problem, yeah. And if you, yeah, Little Prince with baobabs. Every morning you have to take out the baobabs before they grow into big things.
Uh huh.
And now I've got some baobabs to deal with.
Right, and it's twofold. One, it's what, as we always talk about, it's what expands the compassion, and it's also what reveals what's behind it. You know, it's one of those, it's why we have to have a good sense of humor. Because, you know, I'm dealing with this thing. Oh, it's so big. It's so scary. It's so hard. I don't know if I can do it. I really don't know if I, and I get through to the other side, and there's something bigger. This is really unfair. I thought I was finished. No, it's just that you're getting more qualified for the next bigger job.
Yeah, this is stuff that, you know, it's kind of like I've spent my life ignoring.
Mm-hmm. Running away from is how we often talk about it. Yeah. And then we can't. We get to the point where we can't. And it takes us a long time to get to the place of being able to say, thank you. Thank you. I need to face this. You're right. I need. This is where I need to be.
Yeah, because I've done it before. I've been clean before.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you're clean now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tried to slip that one in, didn't you?
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. You're very welcome. Keep in touch.
I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have about 7 minutes left, and we have one more caller.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Next caller, you are on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Karen from California.
Karen?
Yes.
Hi, Karen.
Hi.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
What's going on?
Well, I want to ask a question.
Okay.
I'm wondering, I want to ask about reflective listening. And so my daughter is 28. And my husband thinks that, well, she doesn't live in the same town, but that she calls, that she relies on me too much, that she, for support, for kind of emotional support. And so I've been trying to just really do pure reflective listening.
Excuse me just a moment, but have you told her that's what you're doing?
Oh, yeah.
She's
graduating as a therapist this month, graduating from college as a therapist. And so she's familiar with reflective listening. I think they learn it, but I don't think they learn it this way, you know,
mm-hmm.
with absolutely no agenda. And
mm-hmm.
so I'm just thinking about how, you know, it seems to me that if I was really, truly doing reflective listening, just pure reflective listening with her, with anybody, I couldn't do anything harmful, could I? I mean, I'm just being present.
Yeah. Now, what is behind that question?
Well, because I'm wanting some reassurance, because I want to be there for her, and I'm afraid.
Would the voices try to convince you that it's not enough just to reflect?
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, yes, I'm very, sometimes I'm really tempted to give advice, and sometimes I give her reassurance. But when I remember, and if I could remember, just to reflect, it's it just seems like I wouldn't have to worry about, you know, her being too dependent on me or
And, well, let me ask you this. Are you worried about that, or is your husband worried about that?
My husband's worried about it.
Okay, so you're already not worried about her being too dependent upon you.
Well, let me think about that. I might have some of those concerns, although what's more overriding is that I feel like I really want to be there for her if she's called and she's upset or she's, you know, she has a friend that's having a real difficult problem and she's in tears. I want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband thinks that she at this age, she shouldn't be calling me about these kinds of things.
Uh-huh.
That at that age that you're relying on your friends or other people kind of for that kind of support.
Uh-huh, not your mother.
Yeah, not your mom.
Mm-hmm.
And so so I don't know what to do with that. And I just think, okay, what could I do? What kind of support that I could I give that wouldn't foster her dependence on me, or
you know, here's the thing. This is the part that strikes me, that maybe it's doing a little reflective listening with your husband.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't hear that you gals have a problem.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You're happy in the relationship. You're both happy in the relationship as it is.
Mm-hmm.
But your husband has concerns about it.
Yes.
So his concerns don't necessarily mean that you need to do something different in your relationship with your daughter. But it might be something that you would want to address in your relationship with your husband.
Okay, that's very good to look at, and that's a really good point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's nothing to say that you want to change your relationship with your daughter.
That's true.
And in fact, if you did attempt to change it and didn't want to, that could create problems in your relationship with your husband, because you could become resentful that he would be interfering in a relationship that is actually the way you want it to be.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I have to say that, you know, my closest relationship is my husband, and that it's the hardest for me to remember reflective listening in my very closest relationship.
Yep, it is.
And
we're so hooked in.
Yeah, and so that would be a wonderful, wonderful place for me to practice.
Yeah,
and
you know,
see.
It's not a bad thing that it's hardest for us to remember in those relationships. That's where we're most invested. That's where we're most attached.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, we don't want to have that become a point of suffering, but caring deeply about a relationship, let me just do a timeout here. So we are familiar with the idea of being in a difficult relationship and having a hard time staying centered.
Yeah.
You know, so you have somebody at work who's really challenging to be with. And so the person is working in their spiritual practice to try to stay centered, try to stay in a place of compassion. Okay, we all kind of know that place. But the other end of the continuum is the same issue. When you care so much about someone, it's very difficult to stay in that stepped back, yes, they're equal to their life, I don't need to get upset, I don't need to take this on or take it personally. Each is equally challenging for us spiritually.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe make a date with him.
Mm-hmm.
And could be a very fun relationship thing to just practice reflecting one another.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That's very helpful. Thank you.
Well, good.
I'm going to try that.
Let us know how it goes. There are lots of couples out there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's. I don't know why that never occurred to me. But
well,
thank you.
All right. You're
okay.
Very welcome. Good night.
Okay. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Karen. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I don't know how I got so lucky.
Not me either.
This radio show is just very inspiring to me.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Yeah.
Good time. Let's do it again.
Let's do it again.
What are you doing
Tuesday.
Next Tuesday? About 5 o'clock?
5 o'clock. I'm free.
Okay, let's start about 10 minutes till 5 and hear all of the good news and stuff that's going on at the Zen Monastery Peace Center and Living Compassion. Then you and I will meet up and talk to some lovely people.
That sounds great.
Right.
Thank you,
Sherry.
Thanks,
Michael.
Good night.
Good night.